This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not substitute for professional medical advice. Please seek a medical professional or healthcare provider if you're seeking any medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Thanks, everyone.
Before we start today's episode, we're going to be talking about our new sponsor.
Yes.
And this is Freed AI.
Have you heard of Freed AI?
I have. And it sounds like an amazing product.
Yes.
Because Lord knows that I spend all my time doing my notes.
All the time.
And my charting and documentation and coding and everything. And then I get frustrated when other people don't do the same thing.
Exactly. So, yeah. And then you're not spending enough time with the patient or at home because you're like trying to catch up.
Yes. I'm always just stuck on charts. And that's that. I really try not to be looking at my computer when I'm talking to a patient. But it's really hard because once that patient leaves the room, I have to sit down and chart everything or go back home. Pajama party.
Yep.
Right? And then in bed, start charting. And I'm constantly like, did they say this? Or they did say that? So then I kind of summarize everything. But it's so nice to just have something that literally transcribes everything in the moment before the patient even walks out of the room. Have your documentation ready to go.
Exactly. That's amazing. And I remember also from my husband when he was working at a clinic, he would be back home and just spend so much time just charting away with his little like notes and then putting them into the EMR and stuff like that. So, which is great because when I spoke with Freed AI, it kind of came from that story where her husband, his name is Erez, he's a computer engineer and he created this for Freed AI because his wife is just spending so much additional time, trying to chart away and keep up with the workload and whatnot. So it's a great product. It's being used right now with more than 12,000 clinicians in every specialty. There's over 1 million notes that are written each month using Freed. Of course, it's HIPAA compliant, so you don't have to worry about protecting your patient's safety, which is obviously very important. Yes.
And also, it works as a scribe.
Exactly.
Right? And there are a lot of clinics and hospitals that use scribes. However, I can say through experience, it's very hard even with a scribe because at the end of the day, you're not the person writing that note. So maybe something that a patient said might be transcribed by that person in a different way.
Right.
So it's really difficult because then sometimes you have to double back to fix those notes.
Makes sense.
So more time. And then also, it was always a bad day when my scribe would call out or quit on me.
Which obviously would not happen here.
Exactly. And also, I will say as well, which I think is brilliant, is that not only does it cover across all specialties, but it covers different languages.
Oh, yes.
So for me, I have a high Spanish-speaking patient population.
Yes.
So I was always worried that even if we had one of these systems, I wouldn't really get the benefits of it because half of my visits, or more than half, almost 100% of my visits are mostly in Spanish.
Yeah.
Right? So then I would say, what's the point in having these things or these systems that can transcribe if they can't even transcribe in Spanish? It's amazing because Freed AI can work through various languages. So it's not just Spanish, English. You know, they have
French,
multiple others, which is amazing.
It's wonderful. I mean, it just obviously it just takes off so much of that burden of like and so much of that stress of like, you know, okay, let me try to remember that. Let me chicken scratch that so I don't forget that important thing to put in their chart afterwards or whenever I could get to it. It's a wonderful system. It takes less than 30 seconds to get it up and running. So it's not something that you have to spend so much time learning and trying to get used to it and whatnot.
Very user-friendly.
Very user-friendly, easy to use.
Which I can say personally, every time that someone introduces a new system to me, I'm like,
of course.
Here we go. I'm going to have to sit through a whole entire day of training and it's going to like back me up into my day. And no, it's very user friendly.
Not the case here. So that on its own is a huge benefit as well, just to get it up and running.
I also think it's fantastic that this came from two people that are experienced with this charting and the world of charting and how much time it can take away from your personal life. So it's very tailored and it doesn't come from someone that has never been in a clinic, has never done charting before. And I think that that is a perspective that is so important and it's really unique to FreedAI.
Absolutely. So go ahead and give it a try. You can try 10 notes for free. And after that, it costs $99 a month. But you could also try FreedAI using our code FUNNY50. You would have to go to getfreed.ai. And so let me just spell that out for you. GETFREED.AI and user code FUNNY50 for $50 off your first month.
And trust me, it is worth it.
It's wonderful. Give that a shot. And now back to the episode.
I do feel like Serrano answered perfectly. She's like, this isn't the first time that she had buns. Everyone knows that she had buns. She's done it in her other fights.
Yeah.
And this is like my first time or whatever.
Yeah.
I felt like that's it.
Yeah.
You know, she spoke for herself.
Then
the coach came.
Yeah.
And was like.
Yeah, he was real pissed. Yeah.
And the referee and all these things. And I was just like, you don't need to defend her.
Yeah, clearly you don't. Yeah.
But like.
Yeah.
She spoke. She mentioned everything. But now it was almost like a tinge of like sore loser. He was defending her.
I know, but I feel like it's a sore loser for him.
Not for her.
Yeah.
But I'm seeing that it like ruined it. Like, just let her talk for herself.
Absolutely.
They asked her the question,
right.
He kept on going off to the point that the guy was like, "All right, last statement," you know.
Yeah,
it was kind of just like he took that away from her.
Yeah, I see your point.
I felt. I know that he was defending her. I know it came from a good place.
Yeah.
You know, but then
he was upset in the emotions.
He was upset in the emotions. He's like 114, 117, or this featherweight, and she's little, but she has a lot of heart and all these things. And I was like, I stop. Like, everyone knows.
Yeah,
her amazing.
Yeah,
like. Fighting and history, you know, it's like, but I felt like she answered perfectly.
Yeah.
You know, like,
and you could tell that she was pissed.
And she was pissed and she's like, oh, she headbutted me.
Yeah.
Oh, everyone does that. Everyone knows. And she came at me with the headbutts. And then, but I felt like she like stood up for herself in a sense. She's like, that's boxing. I'm going to keep on fighting and all that stuff. And then the guy came in and I was just like, what, bro? I'm like, this is not.
I know. I agree.
But I didn't see Taylor's question. I only saw Serrano. Did the Taylor thing.
It was very bland. It was very like, I don't even remember, to be honest.
Bro, Serrano, she's a brick.
Yeah.
Her eye was just flapping.
I know.
It was just flapping.
It was a gaping hole.
Flapping. And she, I could see Taylor. Taylor wouldn't have lasted another 30 seconds.
I don't think so.
Taylor was so exhausted and Serrano was beat up.
Yep.
But she was standing.
That's why I was like, how? How? And it was like very little points. I think it was like 2 or 3 points only. But still, it was an upset. Like, people were upset. People were like booing and the whole thing. And this is the first time I saw them. I don't really follow boxing.
I don't follow boxing either.
But when I saw that, I was like, God damn. Like, just fighting. And then, like, fucking Tyson lost, and it's like, everybody, I mean, that could have united this whole country all over again.
And they think that the popular vote was going for Paul?
I don't know.
No.
Everyone
was going for Tyson.
Yeah, I think so.
But they say that it was rigged, so.
Which I could kind of, you
but
know.
But to me,
because
first of all, it's the age difference makes a world of a difference. Like, let's be real.
27, 58.
Yeah, let's be real.
And possible CTE. We just check out our CTE episode.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
A 58-year-old.
I want to see you try to fight Tyson when he was your age. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I already thought that that was kind of unfair.
Super. Oh my God, the memes are hysterical. They're like, oh, Jake Paul is next going to fight Mitch McConnell.
The internet is crazy.
When I saw that, I'm like, damn, he's going to get roasted. And that's what the people were saying. They're like, this is a lose-lose for Paul.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because if he loses, he loses, right? But if he wins, it's like he because he won against a 58-year-old, bro.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, I was like, do you really think that I was going to get raped? Like, Tyson, with his name, his legacy,
yeah,
and everything, that yeah, he's just going to, like, chalk it up to, like, oh, I'm getting paid.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't believe it.
They did ask him, oh, mm-hmm, will you do this again or whatever? He didn't say no. It's insane. But he is insane.
Yeah, he is insane.
Mike Tyson has always been known to be like that, though.
Yeah. Like, short fuse.
Yeah, he wanted.
Impulsive.
He had wanted and paid. Like, he was, like, offering to pay to go into a gorilla enclosure because he wanted to fight a silverback.
He's fucking nuts.
Exactly.
It's fucking nuts.
It's Mike Tyson.
And a silverback? Are you fucking kidding me?
A silverback gorilla?
My love.
They didn't take it.
Of course he wouldn't take it.
No.
He would die.
The zoo were like, no. He's like, but I'll pay you millions. No. Mike, no. Well, you're literally paying us.
We just saved your life. Yeah, exactly.
Like, no. Dude, the guy's insane. Hence why he did this fight, honestly. Because any other 58-year-old boxer wouldn't have done this.
Yeah.
I mean, or maybe now it's a trend.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe now this becomes a trend.
And did you see how the girl at the beginning before the fight, she was like, do you think that he's a good boxer? And the two, like, boxers were like, he's improving. He has a great team, great coaches. He's improving. And then the guy was like, compared to who? Everyone would just, like, deflect the question.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, yeah, massive tangent that we started this on. But I mean,
for those of you that watch the fight.
Yeah, exactly. This we're recording this and like Netflix the day after.
God,
why would you say that you're going to do
the
this?
The internet comments on Netflix were so good.
Incredible.
There were people. Incredible. My favorite one was, has anyone tried turning on and off Netflix? Are you turning it on and off?
You know, that's a millennial or Gen Xer, for sure.
So funny.
Oh my God, but I'm like, Netflix, come on. You knew the turnout that this was going to be. Yeah. You knew that everybody and their mother was going to.
For months.
Exactly. No, and it was postponed.
Yeah.
Remember? I don't know. Anyway, so we're recording this like the day after. This is obviously all the way now in December when you're hearing this. We're going to be talking about PCOS. And then that kind of like, I don't know, got us into talking about the amazing fight between Serrano and Taylor. Yeah. That was much better than the Tyson.
Yeah, I think everyone can agree that the stars there were the girls.
Absolutely. Like, dude, they.
The gash.
And they were just fighting.
Flapping.
They were fighting. Paul and Tyson, it was like,
yeah.
What? We're talking about two people. Paul was supposedly known for like knockouts and this and that. And then Tyson's just Tyson.
Yeah.
And then this fight happened. I was like, what?
He was just so calm and
I didn't see that anger in Tyson that he's usually known for in the boxing ring, that he comes out like a feral animal. Like, no. Yeah. Like, what happened? Did they drug him before going out there? Bro, and I wanted to punch the TV screen when I saw Paul's entrance.
I didn't see it.
You didn't?
The buffering. I missed, like, clips.
The worst
peacocking. Oh, no. He came out, like, on a car.
Yes!
Yeah. I did see that.
I don't know who else and all this thing. I'm like,
it's terrible.
It's small, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm like, it's small. It's small, right? Like, it's... Yeah, and then you just see Mike coming out just like typical boxer.
Yeah, like Serrano. Serrano came out, and then Taylor came out with like this Celine Dion, and it wasn't Celine Dion, but it felt like Celine Dion.
Yeah, yeah.
And I liked it, but I was like, I need more Olive. You're about to go fight.
Yeah. Put in like, I don't know, some hip hop or rap or something, or rock, and like, you know, you're gonna.
I wonder what Puerto Rico's gonna do today. Because they were announcing it. They're like, we're going to be in Puerto Rico tomorrow.
could only imagine. I could only imagine. But anyways, we're going to be talking in this episode. Welcome back.
Welcome back, guys.
Hi. I hope Thanksgiving went well for you.
Yes.
And you scored big in Black Friday.
Yes. Happy Thanksgiving for everyone.
And all those things. Yeah. For those of you that celebrate here in the U.S. And now we're going to be talking about PCOS.
Yes.
And there we go. That would help. Okay.
And we're going to talk about PCOS. We're just pulling up our
show notes. What is it, Doc?
Okay, so PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, or ovary syndrome, okay, is an endocrine disorder that primarily affects women of reproductive age, right? So when you're trying to get pregnant, right?
Yep.
Just reproductive age, right? After menarche. What?
Nothing.
That's what's called when you get your period, menarche.
Menarche?
Yeah, menarche.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, menarche.
Why is the word men, like, why is men there? Well, it's like menstrual.
Yeah, like menarche. That's written. Yeah.
Okay.
Adrenarche is like when you like have like hair and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yes, okay. Menarche. Yes, yeah, so after menarche, you are in reproductive age, okay? So the main feature is a hormonal imbalance, particularly in excess of androgens, male hormones, in women. The condition, its name comes from polycystic ovaries. That means women with PCOS have multiple small cysts or follicles that can contain eggs, but do not mature enough to trigger ovulation. However, the presence of these cysts is not necessary for diagnosis, which I think is a really common misconception.
Yeah.
And some women with PCOS may have clear ovaries on an ultrasound. So again, it came from that, right? Because it does show that that's where polycystic came from. I'm just waiting for the day that they change the name of that syndrome.
It's overdue.
Yeah. There's so many women that get misdiagnosed. Or not diagnosed.
Underdiagnosed, I think is
a big
problem here. Yeah.
And they're just suffering with a lot of the symptoms and troubles that you can have from PCOS.
Yeah.
And just because they have a negative ultrasound, they're like, well, no, you can't have negative. But I think a lot of education is starting. There's a lot of education flowing around. And I think a lot of physicians are more aware.
Yeah, yeah. And I know that we're talking about PCOS today, but guys that listen to us, you should tune in because this is something that's very much out there. We're talking about this a lot. And I feel like this is gaining a lot of traction.
For everyone.
It's for, exactly.
It's for everyone. This is hormonal. Knowledge, right? You know,
exactly.
Yeah. You never know if one day you're going to have a woman in your life that's suffering from PCOS.
Yeah. And it could be a partner or family member or whatever, you know? Exactly. And it's just... It's interesting, to be honest, too. Like all the things that happen.
Yeah. All right. So the hormonal imbalance disrupts the normal cycle of the egg development and release, which is why periods become really irregular or stop altogether. For many women, PCOS can be an emotional challenge due to symptoms that can affect appearance, fertility, and self-esteem. And we'll talk a little bit on the reasons why. Mm-hmm. So, however, the treatment can help manage a lot of these symptoms. And also, there's also like other complications that in the future can also cause some problems. So it's really important to establish these sort of diagnoses.
Okay. Absolutely. And the more you think about it, and the more you read into this, and as you'll be listening or watching us, I think you'll agree with me. This is not named right.
Yeah, no.
It's not named right. No. This is hormonal, you know? Yeah. And then I feel like that's one of the reasons why it's so misdiagnosed.
Yeah.
Because they're focusing so much on these.
On something else, yeah.
Yeah, which is just not always the case.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's so many, it's interesting to me, there are so many diseases that I know about that have major criteria and minor criteria. Mm-hmm. So you have to meet two of the major or three of the minor.
You're right.
Or something like that. And this does not have that.
Why not?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating.
Yeah. So, okay. So the history of PCOS. Jules, take it away. History teacher.
Here I am. All right. So PCOS, where did it come from? Why is it a thing? It has likely been affecting women for centuries, but it was first officially recognized by Dr. Irvin Stein and Dr. Michael Löwenthal in 1935. Okay. So we've known about this for a while too, which is even a little bit more frustrating too. They observed the connection between polycystic ovaries and specific symptoms like irregular periods,
infertility.
That's the word for the episode for me to trip over. And hirsutism. There. Another word that I tripped over. And so that's excessive hair growth, which is one of the symptoms of PCOS. So this discovery led to a better understanding of how reproductive and metabolic health intertwine. Since then, research has advanced significantly, revealing that PCOS is not only a reproductive disorder, but a metabolic one with far-reaching health implications.
Yeah. So a couple of the causes that we're going to talk about, exact causes are unknown, right? Or unclear. Okay. And then, so we do feel like there's several factors that can be involved in order to understand how they play a role. Okay. So genetics. All right. So PCOS tends to run in families, which suggests a genetic link. Studies have identified that certain genes associated with insulin regulation, and just keep that in the back of your mind because that's important for PCOS, and reproductive hormones that may contribute to the condition. Insulin resistance, all right, that's why we're going to segue into that. Many women with PCOS have insulin resistance, almost like a diabetic type of picture, okay? So meaning their bodies don't use insulin effectively to process glucose. This can lead to higher insulin levels, which in turn stimulates the ovaries to produce more androgens, okay? Exacerbating symptoms like irregular periods, weight gain, hair growth, acne is a big one too.
Which you got to think, like, all the women that suffer with that and then they're not diagnosed appropriately.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's...
I have a lot of girls that present with this syndrome. And that's the thing, this, the name, it's like right and wrong all at the same time. Mm-hmm. I think that they need to change the polycystic portion of it because that's a description that doesn't even need to be present in order for you to have PCOS. But it is a syndrome. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of things going on. It's a syndrome. A lot of different things happening together that is a syndrome of PCOS, right? So another part of that is the hormonal imbalance. So aside from the androgens, women with PCOS also have higher levels of sex hormone binding globulin, so SHBG, which helps regulate androgen levels. So if you're producing a lot of androgens, and if you don't have this sex hormone binding globulin, then you cannot regulate that, right? So another hormone is luteinizing hormone, which is one of the hormones that we measure in these syndromes or when we suspect these syndromes.
In
a blood test. And it's often elevated, leading to increased androgen production and disruption in ovulation, right? So ovulating and the menstrual cycle, if you want to be impressed by physiology, just dedicate a video to the menstrual cycle. The menstrual cycle is one of the hardest things for people to study because there's so many things. That is going to be a detailed episode because it is so hard. There's so many hormones.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's so many things going on.
I'll just have to like, break it down, yeah.
Yeah, there's so many levels of hormones. The period, and when does it start, and when does it end, and then this cycle, the follicular cycle, and then...
For men, too, it'd be interesting for men to, like, know what the hell is a menstrual cycle.
Everyone to know, right? That it's not just having a period.
Exactly. And it's just, like, I was listening to The Basement Yard the other day, and it was fucking hysterical how... But then, again, also illuminating to me.
Yeah.
How little men know about periods.
Yeah. Like, well, it's really complicated. And let's just be honest. Yeah. Like, if you're not taking a physiology class, when are you learning about that?
Exactly.
You're not, right?
Yeah.
And it's really hard. It's actually one of the hardest things to learn because of all the moving parts in it.
Mm-hmm.
And till this day, it's one of the hardest things to study in physio. It's one of the hardest things to study when you're learning about it in medical school and all the different complications that you can have from that one cycle, okay?
Yeah.
But it's pretty incredible all the hormones that are involved and all of the things that can be causing PCOS and the reason why they have abnormal cycles.
And they cause major symptoms.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
and we're talking about life disrupting.
Yeah.
You know, like your everyday is disrupted by...
Physically and mentally.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the other part about PCOS is the inflammation part about it. It's a low-grade chronic inflammation that's going to be happening during PCOS, and it's thought to play a role in the reason of its development. So this inflammation may increase androgen production in the ovaries, further contributing to the hormonal imbalance.
These symptoms they could be really, really rough, okay? And just completely derail your everyday life. If you could just fix these symptoms, your life could drastically change.
Yeah.
So symptoms of PCOS vary widely, and not all women experience every symptom, right? So the most common are the ones I'm going to be talking about right now, because there's so many that we're just going to focus on at least the most common ones, recorded, yeah. viewed, yeah. all that. So irregular periods or amenorrhea. I said that one right. See? Anyway, so irregular periods are often...
We say amenorrhea.
Oh, fucking hell.
I'm sure a lot of people say amenorrhea.
You let me celebrate and everything.
I couldn't stop. It was so cute. It was so cute. Amenorrhea.
That. Irregular periods are often one of the first signs of PCOS caused by an ovulation.
Yeah. Okay. That one was right. That one was right.
Okay. Good. Good. Yeah. Or lack of
ovulation.
Exactly. Yeah. Pretty much like if you hear A,
that means it's not happening.
Exactly. So women with PCOS may have fewer than 9 periods a year or go months without menstruating, which like right off the bat, for if you don't know about all of this, may sound like amazing. You're like, yeah. Oh my God, you don't have a period. That's awesome. Sometimes you need to have periods, you know?
Yeah.
So I can't say this word.
Hirsutism. A lot of people say hirsutism, a lot of people say hirsutism, but...
Okay. It means excessive hair growth.
Yeah.
On the face for women. And we're talking about biological women, female, okay? Yeah. Born female.
Yeah. And the reason why it's on the face is because it's in like that male pattern.
Exactly.
Right?
So, yeah. So like in the chin.
Like
you
that
know?
Androgen exposure.
Exactly. So as she was saying, in the face, so like chin area, all that stuff, chest and back.
Buttocks.
Okay. All that stuff. And it's common. It's a very common feature of PCOS due to the elevated androgens, as she was saying. So it can be distressing for women, impacting their self-esteem and their social confidence, obviously. Because if you have it like all over like that, it's kind of hard.
No, it's really hard. Know.
Then acne and oily skin. I suffer from that big time. So androgens stimulate the sebaceous oil glands. You know, sebaceous means oil, right? So it's those glands in the face, body, because it could be everywhere. Acne doesn't have to be just in the face. It could be back, everywhere, leading to acne, which can be severe and persistent than your typical adolescent.
I'm like, oh.
Acne. Yeah. So, and that's hard. I could tell you from my personal experience, I had to even take Accutane when I was 13 or 14 when I took it. So right after my preteens. When you're in your teenage years and you're going through major acne, and I had cystic acne,
yeah.
It's hard. Because you're already dealing with all of these things.
Everything. Your body changes.
All of that. Your self-esteem is like the most fragile thing when you're in that, you know, age range. You don't even know who you are. And then you have a pizza face. You know?
Yeah.
It's just so hard. It's awful. So I sympathize. I get it. So weight gain or difficulty losing weight. So insulin resistance can make weight management challenging, especially as PCOS can lower the body's ability to process sugar efficiently. Just add that on to, if you're talking about mental health, just add that on to it. So thinning hair on the scalp. In one place, you have like excess hair growth, like in places that at least average in female, they wouldn't want it. It's undesirable there, like in the chin, all that stuff. But then you have thinning of where you want your hair, you know, in your scalp and whatnot. And that's called androgenic alopecia. So see, I could say that. Why? How could I say that? Elevated androgen levels can cause hair loss in the scalp in a pattern similar to male pattern baldness, with thinning at the crown. So like right up here and top of the head. So just like right up here. And then polycystic ovaries on the ultrasound. This is the one that is a little controversial, at least to us, you know.
But it's a classic feature.
Exactly.
Like if you have it, you definitely need to like think about it.
Exactly. Although not every woman with PCOS have visible cysts, okay? Yes.
And so, not every woman with cysts in the ovaries has PCOS.
Exactly. So the cysts are actually underdeveloped follicles containing immature eggs. Painful periods, dysmenorrhea, are common symptoms for many women, including those with PCOS. Though the pain in PCOS may differ in cause and intensity compared to other menstrual disorders. Evie's going to give us a breakdown of.
And by the way, take a shot for every time we say PCOS.
No, seriously. If you do, you know, vaya con Dios if you do.
Yeah. All right, so the pain associated with PCOS. So pain isn't always a main symptom associated with PCOS, but it honestly should be, because when you have an irregular cycle, that shedding of that uterine lining is painful, right? So pelvic pain. So chronic pelvic pain can occur due to ovarian cysts. That's another one. Just the cysts in general can be painful.
Have you ever had one?
No, I've never had a ruptured cyst before.
Never. I have given birth.
But I've heard that it feels like you have an appendicitis.
I have given birth. And I technically got my epidural like in the last freaking like minutes that mm-hmm. I could possibly get it. I felt a lot of pain in giving birth. Because I'm hard-headed like that.
Yeah.
And whatever. Anyway, I have had two ruptured ovarian cysts that just ruptured on their own. It wasn't like surgical or anything like that. That's worse.
Yeah.
Worse than labor contractions, worse than the actual process of labor, worse than all of that.
Yeah.
Worse. I felt like I was actively being stabbed in the gut.
Damn.
It is the worst. And it's like one of those things that it is immobilizing. The first time I ever had it, I was 16. It woke me up in the dead of the night, like just like if somebody had stabbed me and I was sleeping. My belly, like the bottom part, like my pelvic area, got inflamed and everything. I went as an emergency to see the gynecologist. Luckily, I was working with at a doctor's office and he sent me to a friend of his or whatever. And she's like, yeah, it's a ruptured cyst that just happened. And it was, I will never forget it. Yeah. I couldn't stand straight. I had to be hunched.
Yeah, hunched. People describe it like if it's like they're concerned for an appendicitis.
And then the other time was in San Antonio. Again, woke me up. Dead asleep. Woke me up. I am actively, like Mario was sleeping. And I remember getting up like the pillow next to me and screaming into the pillow. Because it was just like, to the point that he figured it out. And then he's like, you're actively going through a ruptured cyst right now. So he just started giving me meds and stuff like that. And the next day, still throughout the next day, I was still in pain until eventually I got over it. But it is, I don't desire that pain to my worst enemy.
Yeah.
It literally feels like you're getting stabbed in the gut. It's the worst thing. If any of you have gone through
from waffle,
it's really, really, really bad. I'm glad you have it. I'm really glad.
I'm like not gonna look right now. I don't want it.
Horrible. I'd rather give birth again than go through another one. Jesus. Unfortunately, yeah. Anyway,
yes.
But I also don't have, mind you, that's happened to me twice, and every time I've gotten an ultrasound, nothing.
But the thing is that you have cysts.
Yeah.
Right. It's just poly, like a lot of them. Mm. But you can, like, you have little like cysts, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then those cysts will rupture and then you release the egg, right? So, but you do. Yeah. And then these cysts, they're pretty small. They're fluid filled follicles that didn't fully mature and to release an egg when you ovulate. While many cysts don't cause symptoms, some can lead to dull or even sharp pelvic pain, as in Julie's case, that she felt like she was getting stabbed.
Very sharp pelvic pain.
Especially if they grow and then rupture, okay?
Yeah.
So painful periods, also called dysmenorrhea, is a condition characterized by intense cramping and abdominal pain during menstrual cycles. Although women with PCOS may experience fewer periods, the periods they do have can still be really painful.
You literally had just said that, yeah.
Yeah. So heavier bleeding, right? Because longer time building up that uterine lining. So heavier bleeding, prolonged periods due to the buildup of the endometrial lining, like I just said. Mm. Hormonal imbalances that can affect the uterine lining, causing it to shed in a more disruptive way. So not even in a normal way. Yeah. And then pain from the ovulation, also called middle schmerz. Okay.
So glad you read that.
If a woman with PCOS does ovulate either naturally or through medication, she might experience the ovulation pain called middle schmerz, which is a sharp or cramping pain on one side of the lower abdomen. This pain occurs when the egg is released from the follicle from the ovary and then can feel similar to cramping or kind of like a dull ache.
I have had that.
Yeah.
Mind you, I don't have strong like cramps. I've known people that have like when they're on their period, they're just like in pain all the time. Thankfully, I'm not like that.
I do have middle schmerz.
Yeah. I like they come and they go. Like I get the
I don't really think about it. Like, I'm not like, oh, this is Mittel Schmerz, you know? Yeah. But like, if I do think about it, like a couple of weeks before, maybe a week before, a little pain, a little cramping pain.
Yeah,
me that's Mittel Schmerz. Yeah.
All right. So how much time in a day, a week, what have you, do you have to carve out either morning, afternoon, whatever it is, to go to an actual gym or a place to work out?
Not a lot.
Exactly. I figured.
Between work, life, mom life.
Yeah.
Everything that goes along with that. Life. I don't have time. I literally, when I go work out, I need to go and someone needs to tell me what to do.
Yeah.
Because if not, I will be there for 3 hours and it would be the most inefficient workout ever.
Exactly. You need somebody to lead you and to just make sense of that, what you're doing actually is going to work for what you want.
And it's actually going to, give me progress and results.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. If not, I feel like I'll just be looking at the machine and like, I guess
I should do it. Yeah. And then sometimes there's the situation where I don't have time, right? And then when let's say I do have time or someone else has time, mm-hmm. and you go to the gym, it's how many times do you go and you look at a machine and you just question and then you turn away and then you just go to the treadmill.
Yep. Happens to me all the freaking time.
Yeah, and because cardio is great, but weight training, mm-hmm. we all know with all the research and the science that's been coming out, we need to do weight training.
Exactly. And then it's like, how much of it do you need to do? How much are you doing too much, doing too little?
Little.
Yeah. All those things. And then you're like, well, you could get a personal trainer, but those are pretty pricey.
Yeah. You know?
And you so also have to schedule them.
And 20 minutes. Yep. So whatever you don't do in those 20 minutes, goodbye.
Yeah.
Not saying that all personal training is like that, but most of the time it is, especially if you do go to a gym.
But we actually discovered Alpha Progression, and it's an app. It's a no BS training for muscle growth specifically. Alpha Progression is the go-to app for anyone trying to train, maximize muscle gain. And they are focused 100% on that. And it's science-based, which we love.
Which is great because everything should be backed up by evidence, not just someone without any credentials or any references or anything just telling you, oh, yeah, this is what you need to do because blah.
Injuries could happen, you know?
And that's what we want to avoid, right? Exactly. We don't want to get injured so that we go in this terrible cycle of went to the gym, tried it, didn't work out for me, ended up in an injury.
It was developed by serious lifters with personal training and competitive bodybuilding backgrounds as well.
Alpha Progression has been recognized twice as App of the Day on Apple. Yeah. Just think about it. How many apps are out there and they've been featured twice as App of the Day. Also, it's one of the top rated fitness apps in Germany. For those of you that don't know, Germany has a huge fitness culture and they've recently started to expand to other places, which is great because hello, obesity in the United States.
Yep.
Welcome.
Exactly.
Give it to us.
Exactly. So it's one of the most intuitive workout loggers. So users love the UI and constantly it tells them how easy it is to use. And even though it's packed with features, making it ideal tool for both novices and seasoned trainers. So even if you're like, well, how much do I actually need this? I've been working out for years. It will probably show you something that you didn't know or how much of something you should be doing, etc., according to your actual level in working out. Because again, it's science-based.
Also, when you put in all your information, obviously your height, your weight, how active you are, they also take into consideration what machines you have. What don't you have? Do you have anything at all?
Yeah.
So it's really very much tailored to the person that is doing the workouts. It's all made from scratch. So you have your own plans. It's really quality wise that our plans measure up to the best personal trainers in the world.
They had a coach that charges $500 a month do the app, and it told them he would have done exactly the same thing.
Exactly.
Another big thing about the app is that strength training is all about progression, right? So then their actual algorithm analyzes past performances and gives recommendations for weight reps in every set. This obviously will guarantee long-term success and you won't be in those plateaus or anything like that. Obviously, it sounds so great. How much is it, right? So the pro version is $12.99, and this is in USD per month, or $79.99 for a whole year. But you also could just give it a try with a 2-week free trial. And since you're listening to this, customers get 20% off their first payment using the link alphaprogression.com/funnymed. And I will put it here for anybody watching this on YouTube. Give that a shot. And you get 20% off and you have 2 free weeks.
Yeah.
So,
and it's a great app.
It is.
Again, backed by science, tailored to you, constantly measuring your progression so that it sets you up for succession and you're never going to hit those plateaus.
So check it out. And yeah, let's go back to the episode. All right. So why are periods so painful with PCOS? Women with PCOS can have less frequent, like she had said, but then they're heavier. When menstruation does occur, it can be painful for several reasons. She had kind of mentioned them. Let's go a little bit more into it. So thickened endometrial lining. So due to infrequent cycles, that endometrial lining builds up over time. And the natural process is for it to shed every... So it's kind of like a naturally cleaning out thing. Yeah.
You build up because you're building up for a pregnancy,
exactly.
Right? And then when you don't get pregnant, then your body's like, I don't need this. So it shuts it out. That's a menstrual cycle.
That's pretty much it. So then you have hormonal imbalances. So higher levels of estrogen and androgens in PCOS can affect the menstrual cycle and may intensify those cramps by stimulating
prostaglandin.
Which is associated with uterine contractions. And then other conditions that just could be co-occurring at the same time. So some women with PCOS have conditions like endometriosis or fibroids.
Fibroids. Fibroid. That is another one to the list.
Okay. You know what? I'm just going to separate it.
Fibroids. Yeah.
Vaginal. Adolescence. I just had said one.
I know. Lethargy. No, you said lethargy.
Okay. All right. There we go. We have an active list going on now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Self-deprecation at its finest, which can cause additional pain and may lead to more severe menstrual discomfort.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little bit about managing painful periods, something that a lot of women have to really like. It's so hard because sometimes I feel like when I have these type of patients, they want me to take away their pain. And I'm like, we cannot. We need to manage. But there are ways to manage it. Mm. Natural ways, medicinal ways. But yeah, anyways, managing pain with painful periods with PCOS. So it often involves addressing both hormonal imbalances and the pain itself. So here's common approaches. I think the most basic one is NSAIDs. So non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. This is like a good example is ibuprofen.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. It can help reduce menstrual cramping by lowering that prostaglandin level. Okay. Which is what causes those that's involved in the contractions and then reducing the inflammation. Okay. So hormonal birth control is another one. We just talked about saying if there's an imbalance in the hormones, then if you give OCPs or hormonal birth control, then that controls that dysregulation of hormones. So birth control pills, patches, or even IUDs can really help regulate the periods and reduce the buildup of that uterine lining and lower the androgen levels. So this can help periods be lighter, more comfortable, and not as painful. Metformin. So metformin, yes, it is that diabetes drugs. Remember, we talked about the insulin resistance that it can lead to with PCOS. So while primarily used to improve insulin sensitivity, metformin can also indirectly benefit period regularity in some women with PCOS, which may reduce the buildup of the uterine lining as well and associated pain with it.
Okay. Isn't it incredible, all these diabetes drugs, all their capabilities these days?
Yeah. And then lifestyle adjustments. So regular exercise is really important, a balanced diet. So there's actually, that's a huge trend. Maybe that's a topic that we can do, PCOS diets.
Okay. Yeah.
So regular exercise, a balanced diet, and stress management can improve the hormonal balance and reduce severe pain with the cramping. Mm-hmm. So heat therapy, that's very common. Heating pad, I think every girl knows about this. Mm-hmm. So applying a heating pad to the lower abdomen can help relax those muscles and ease the pain during painful periods. And then you can have surgical options. So for those with particularly painful or large cysts, surgical interventions such as cyst removal may be an option. However, generally considered only when treatments are ineffective.
And also, that's just something that, you know, these are all like very sensitive organs. So yeah. if it's truly not necessary to have surgical removal,
yeah,
then it's important.
It's like the last resort, like yeah. pretty much at that point. So yeah. don't get scared out of this. There are ways to manage.
You know? And then when to seek, like, okay, when should I call a doctor, yeah. right? So if you experience severe pain, especially if it's sudden, accompanied by fever, nausea, vomiting, that all can be signs of an ovarian cyst rupture or a complication. So yep. usually ovarian cyst rupture is a lot of supportive management, okay?
Yeah.
But fever, crazy intense pain, bent over, should probably go to the hospital, which you didn't do, but Mario was there. Yeah. I'll let you get away with that.
Yeah. And I mean, it was the second time that I had been through it too. So it's yeah. like, I knew what to expect. I'm like, this is going to last me a whole day.
Yeah.
And then if it's not gone by tomorrow, then it's something different. Mm-hmm. And then I will obviously go mm-hmm. see somebody. Mm-hmm. But if it is what I've been through before, it's going to last me today. Tomorrow I'll get better. And then it's just going to happen. And then that's exactly what happened. But anyway, so what's the prevalence, right? So how many women go through this? Roughly.
Out of control today. Jesus Christ.
Anyway, so roughly 1 in 10 women globally, making it one of the most prevalent hormonal disorders. It's more commonly diagnosed in women with obesity, but lean women can also have it. The yeah. prevalence also varies among ethnic groups and seems to be higher among women with South Asian descent.
I didn't know that.
Yes. That was very interesting.
Yeah. And the thin women can also have it is also a really big thing.
Yeah.
Because it's associated with weight gain and all of that. But the thinnest of women can have it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So a little bit about the treatment. So treatment is personalized based on symptoms and personal goals, right? So like managing periods, reducing unwanted hair, or trying to conceive. So that's one of the big moments that women get diagnosed.
Exactly. Because maybe the whole entire time they were kind of just like,
hey, oh, it's a bad period.
I just suffer a bad period, or I just have irregular periods. That's just me. My parents had it, or my mom had it, whatever.
Exactly.
And then when it comes to like infertility, you finally like you're doing so much work, right? Yep. So the doctor has to tell you the reason why you're probably.
And you do more testing.
So that's when you will officially receive a diagnosis. And a lot of women suspect it. They suspect it. Yeah. And then when they go in, it's like, okay, it's official.
Exactly. Exactly. So here are some of the common approaches, right, to treatment. So first one, lifestyle change. So weight management through a healthy diet and regular exercise is one of the most effective ways to manage PCOS symptoms, particularly in improving insulin resistance. Okay. We're not talking about the thin women here. So next one is hormonal birth control. Birth control pills containing estrogen and progestin can help regulate periods, lower androgen levels, and reduce symptoms like acne and excessive hair growth.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'd rather say it the long way than having to trip over that wording in. So for women not planning a pregnancy, this is often the first line of treatment. It was for me, you know. Next one, metformin. Originally a diabetes medication, having a huge spotlight. We're always talking about diabetes medication these days. Metformin can help improve insulin sensitivity in women with PCOS, leading to weight loss, improved ovulation, and regular periods. Next is antiandrogens. So these are drugs like spironolactone, which can block the effects of androgens, helping reduce excessive hair growth and acne. It's often used in combination with birth control pills.
Honestly, the mainstay of like the treatment for PCOS, or like at least like when we're studying, it's like those three. OCPs, metformin, spironolactone. You do the three.
Yep. And fertility treatments. Treatments to try to get pregnant.
Fertility treatments. Jules, what's going on?
All the words that I would trip over are today coming out.
She still can't say
it. I can't.
Fertility. Yes.
Fertility.
Yes.
You're not saying it wrong.
Yes.
But I feel like I'm saying it wrong.
She says it to me and I'm like, yes.
No, it sounds wrong coming out of my mouth.
Fertility. I know. Sometimes that happens to me and I'm like, I say the word. I'm like, why does it sound weird?
It sounds weird to me. And then I trip over it. Oh, wow. Anyway, so treatments for that type of treatment for women with PCOS trying to conceive, medications like Clomiphene,
Clomiphene,
or Letrozole
yeah.
can stimulate ovulation. In some cases, IVF or in vitro fertilization, which is probably another good episode that we should do.
Those medications basically make you ovulate like a lot.
Yeah.
Basically not just one. So you want a lot of ovulation. So the chances of getting pregnant is greater.
Right. And then, of course, very important, mental health support. So women with PCOS have higher rates of anxiety and depression. So addressing mental health is crucial.
Yes. Okay.
Don't let that fall by the wayside, guys.
And a little bit of like long term. Okay, well, like what is long term effects of PCOS? Mm-hmm. So metabolic and cardiovascular risks, I think, are the main ones that we really worry about. Women with untreated PCOS, untreated. Okay, this is untreated. So don't be afraid if you are currently like getting treatment for PCOS. This is untreated. Mm-hmm. So women with untreated PCOS have a higher risk of developing metabolic and cardiovascular disease. We talked about like the diabetes, like, or the insulin resistance that it can cause, and also like those androgenic effects. And then if you have uncontrolled sugar, that can also increase your risk for cardiovascular disease. So again, and I'm just going to summarize everything because I pretty much just said it.
Yeah.
So type 2 diabetes, strongly associated with insulin resistance. Okay. So if you have insulin resistance, that can progress to type 2 diabetes. So there's studies showing that about 60.9% of PCOS patients may develop diabetes. That is why, even if you are not diabetic, we place you on metformin therapy from the beginning. 60.9. It is the same thing as a diabetic being put on a statin, okay? Mm-hmm. Even though their cholesterol is okay, is the same thing. We are trying to prevent those things. Hypertension, approximately 19.8% of women with untreated PCOS may develop high blood pressure. Cardiovascular disease, PCOS, and vitamin D deficiency are both associated with elevated cardiovascular risk. And now let's jump into the reproductive health risks. Untreated PCOS can significantly impact a woman's reproductive health. I think the main one that people obviously know about is infertility. Unfortunately, about 33.2% of women with PCOS experience infertility. You can have pregnancy complications as well. So women with PCOS technically have a higher risk of miscarriages. And then you can also have endometrial hyperplasia, right? So that increased lining of the uterus. So increased endometrial thickness, which can be a precursor to endometrial cancer, is observed in 4.8% of PCOS patients.
That's why there's so many reasons, guys. So many reasons to get checked out if you have any inkling of having it.
Exactly. And then we'll talk about liver-related risks. So PCOS can actually be really closely associated with non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which is also short for NAFLD. PCOS can be considered a significant risk factor in the development of that, which is just fatty liver. I'm just going to call it that. It's just better. Mm. And fatty liver in women of reproductive age, both those with excess weight and those with normal body weight. You can also have mental health risks. Depression, about 40% of women with PCOS experience depression, particularly in the younger ages. Depression and anxiety are common as well for PCOS, and it's often overlooked and left untreated. And that comes with the whole entire syndrome, right?
Yeah.
Other health risks, you can have sleep apnea. Again, if you have weight gain, you can have that obstructive nature when you're sleeping. So 2.5% of women with PCOS can develop sleep apnea. Obesity, I think this is the big one as well. 80% of PCOS patients struggle with obesity or just struggling with weight loss, which 80%. Can exacerbate. Yeah.
80%, guys. Like, it's a big percentage.
Yeah, so it's important. It's important to go get early diagnosis, treatment if you need it, along with lifestyle modifications such as weight loss, and it can significantly reduce these long-term complications. Regular monitoring and management of PCOS symptoms are also crucial for maintaining overall health and well-being in affected women.
Absolutely. So I wanted to know why is PCOS misunderstood and potentially misdiagnosed, right? So let's dive a little bit deeper into that. Why? One, complex and varied symptoms, right? So PCOS presents with a wide range of symptoms, as we've, you know, put out there already. And not every woman would experience them all, right? Some of them are just a few, or maybe just even one. And then there's other ones that have everything, all the symptoms that we had mentioned. So symptoms like irregular periods, excessive hair growth, weight gain, acne, hair thinning, they can all be caused by other conditions as well. This variability can make it difficult for healthcare providers to identify PCOS as the actual underlying issue, because again, it could be a varied amount of other things that could be causing these symptoms. They're very vague symptoms. Furthermore, not all women with PCOS have the typical quote-unquote polycystic ovaries that Evie had mentioned that are traditionally associated with the condition, adding to this confusion.
Yeah, I know.
The lack of a single clear set of symptoms means PCOS doesn't have a quote-unquote one-size-fits-all diagnosis, leading to underdiagnosis or even misdiagnosis. Yep. Then you got number two, lack of standard diagnostic criteria, which is kind of like what we were like harping on earlier in this episode. There's no universally agreed upon diagnostic criteria for PCOS, although most providers use the Rotterdam criteria. According to this, a woman needs to meet at least two out of the three features to be diagnosed. First one is irregular or absent ovulation, which causes irregular periods. The second one would be higher levels of androgens, so testosterone and other male hormones. And the third one is polycystic ovaries visible on an ultrasound. The challenge is that different doctors may use different criteria or prioritize certain symptoms over others, leading to inconsistency in diagnosis. Additionally, some providers may overlook PCOS entirely if they don't see polycystic ovaries on an ultrasound, even though ovarian cysts are not required for diagnosis. So that's why it's always important to get a second opinion if you feel if you feel like something is still not right, get a second opinion.
Yeah, know? I never get offended when someone tells me that they want a second opinion ever. Yeah. Ever.
There's nothing wrong with
it. I encourage
it.
I encourage it. You have any doubt? I mean, obviously there's things that aren't obvious, right? Mm-hmm. But if there's anything, I tell them. Even I sometimes, if I sense that the parents are like off about it, I'm like, I tell them, I'm like, do you want a second opinion?
Yeah.
You know? Or they go to a specialist and they come back to me and I'm just like, I agree with that specialist, but I know that the parents are not. And I'm like, and that's okay. You know, like you're your biggest advocate, you know? So if you want a second opinion, by all means, go get it. I prefer that. I really do.
Absolutely. I think it does a world of good. And it's not going to harm you. Like getting a second opinion is not going to do something bad, you know? So... third one is association with lifestyle factors and misconceptions. So PCOS is often associated with weight gain and obesity, but thin women can also have PCOS. So this is a big, like, as Evie had mentioned, like, it's one of the big factors of like, oh no, she doesn't have PCOS because she's not overweight. Mm-hmm. This misconception can lead to underdiagnosis in women who do not fit the typical profile of someone with PCOS. In some cases, symptoms like weight gain and irregular periods are attributed to lifestyle factors, right? Yeah. Such as your diet or stress, rather than being investigated for PCOS. Additionally, many people, including some healthcare providers, believe PCOS is primarily a reproductive issue, leading to the idea that it only needs to be addressed if a woman is trying to conceive. This misconception overlooks the metabolic and long-term health impacts of PCOS, such as an increased risk for diabetes, heart disease, mental health, all those things that we had previously mentioned. But despite its high prevalence, PCOS is not well understood by the general public or even some healthcare providers, believe it or not. Many women aren't aware of the symptoms of PCOS or may not even realize that their symptoms are connected. Often young women experiencing irregular periods or acne may be told that these issues are quote unquote normal for teenagers or young adults and are not given a thorough evaluation. There's also limited education around the non-reproductive aspects of PCOS, which means that women may not receive adequate care for metabolic symptoms. Increased awareness and understanding of PCOS among healthcare providers and the public could help improve diagnosis rates. And five, PCOS symptoms are often overlooked or minimized. That one I could totally freaking see, unfortunately. Yeah. Women with PCOS are sometimes dismissed when they seek help with their symptoms attributed to stress, weight, or simply just being normal for their age. Like acne, irregular periods, or mood swings might be seen as part of growing up or a result of lifestyle choices, so the underlying hormonal imbalances go uninvestigated. Additionally, symptoms like fatigue, mood changes, or sugar cravings are often not associated with PCOS directly, leading to a delayed diagnosis. You could take the next one.
Yeah. So you also have gender bias in healthcare, which is unfortunate because you shouldn't be.
Yeah.
There can be gender bias in healthcare that affects how women's symptoms are perceived and treated.
Women's health concerns, especially related to hormones, are sometimes less rigorously investigated, and conditions like PCOS can be labeled as psychological or lifestyle issues rather than medical concerns. This can delay the diagnosis and treatment, as patients are not always taken seriously or are told to wait and see if symptoms will kind of resolve on its own. I truly do not understand that. Like,
it's frustrating.
Okay, yes. Okay, how can I explain this? I am not against wait and see, but also while you're doing an evaluation.
I know.
Right? Like, how do you go without doing an evaluation? I always tell patients, hey, let's do some blood work and then we'll see if this needs treatment or not. I mean, let's give it some time.
Yeah, they're already there seeing you. So
exactly. They took the time to come see you. And yes, there are things that we can watch and wait. We don't have to do labs right away. If someone tells me, hey, I've had regular periods all my life and I had one missed period.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, let's not jump to conclusion. However, if it keeps on happening, then definitely come back because we need to do investigations, right? Yeah. So every case is different, but I don't know how people can come in with certain concerns and then just kind of brush it off and say, let's see if it goes away on its own.
Yeah.
So lack of comprehensive PCOS care. So PCOS is a multi-system condition affecting metabolic, reproductive, mental health, but care for PCOS is often fragmented. So endocrinologists may focus on insulin resistance. Gynecologists can focus on reproductive health and dermatologists on the skin symptoms, but an integrated approach is rare, unfortunately. And without a healthcare provider looking at the whole picture, patients can receive partial treatment without formal PCOS diagnosis.
I could definitely see that.
Yeah. There's a lot of new research with GLP-1 drugs and PCOS. And I think you can kind of, with everything that we've talked about today, I think you can kind of see how those can help. Mm-hmm. So the glucagon-like peptide 1 receptor agonists, the semaglutide one, I think that's how everyone knows them, are a class of drugs originally designed to treat type 2 diabetes by improving insulin sensitivity, slowing gastric emptying, and promoting a sense of fullness. So GLP-1 drugs mimic the action of natural hormones like GLP-1, which regulate blood sugars after meals. So again, liraglutide, semaglutide, exenatide.
Yeah,
Mounjaro, Saxenda, Victoza, Ozempic, Wegovy, Byetta. So all of the newer drugs that are out there on the market.
Yep.
These drugs work by enhancing the release of insulin in response to meals, reproductive appetite, slowing digestion.
Reducing appetite.
What did I say?
Reproductive.
Oh, sorry. So these drugs work by enhancing the release of insulin in response to meals, like reducing appetite, slowing digestion, and often leading to weight loss. So why GLP-1 drugs might benefit PCOS? Well, because of all that stuff that we just mentioned, right?
Exactly.
So the weight loss and the insulin resistance. So a lot of women with PCOS struggle with the weight gain and have insulin resistance. So obviously, if you give a GLP-1, you're going to target all those things, right? So these drugs can lead to significant weight loss and help lower the blood sugar levels, which improves that insulin sensitivity and in turn really improve that part of that syndrome. Reduction of androgen levels. So some studies have found that weight loss achieved with GLP-1 drugs can indirectly lead to reductions in androgen levels. Lowering insulin resistance and reducing body weight can help lower testosterone in turn. So this will improve the symptoms like hirsutism and acne. Okay.
Isn't that incredible?
It's incredible. So improvement of menstrual regularity. So by improving the insulin resistance, the GLP-1 receptor agonist may also help normalize menstrual cycles. When insulin levels decrease, it can improve the balance of the reproductive hormones. So potentially restoring a more regular ovulation. And if you restore regular ovulation and menstruation, then the likelihood of you becoming pregnant is also greater.
Yeah.
Okay.
And reducing those unwanted symptoms as well, PCOS.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then you also lower the inflammation. So women with PCOS have a kind of like a low-grade chronic inflammation, which exacerbates that insulin resistance and metabolic complications. So a lot of research are saying that GLP-1 drugs may have anti-inflammatory effects, which could in turn help that aspect of it.
Yeah. And then this research that we were talking about in GLP-1 receptor agonists in PCOS treatment is ongoing, but has been showing promising results, right? So a few key studies include in 2018, a study published by the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism found that women with PCOS who were treated with liraglutide lost more weight and had improved insulin sensitivity compared to those who took metformin, which is a common, like we've mentioned, treatment for PCOS. So a 2017 study in Reproductive Biomedicine Online indicated that women treated with
exenatide
had reductions in body weight, insulin resistance, and testosterone levels, leading to improved menstrual regularity and fewer androgenic symptoms. And in 2021, a review in Obesity Reviews concluded that GLP-1 receptor agonists, especially when combined with lifestyle interventions, could be an effective alternative for women with PCOS and obesity, with effects on weight, menstrual cycles, and hyperandrogenism. So more of those male hormones. Because these medications were originally developed for diabetes, they should be used with caution and ideally under the supervision of a healthcare provider familiar with both PCOS and GLP-1 agonists, right? How do you get your hands on that? Oh, you're wondering, because like you do need kind of those two specialties to get combined into one. So GLP-1 drugs are unfortunately not yet FDA approved specifically for treating PCOS, but I kind of like see it gearing up to there. I've been seeing like news and talks about that. So keep an eye out. And then of course, tune into our monthly recaps. I will let you guys know. But they are generally prescribed off label for this purpose. However, given the accumulating evidence, GLP-1 receptor agonists are increasingly being considered as part of a comprehensive approach to managing PCOS in women with significant metabolic symptoms or obesity. So that was PCOS in a nutshell.
I thought it was a great episode.
Yeah,
it's very informative, a lot of new medicine, a lot of understanding.
Yeah.
All that. I think it's great.
Yeah, I like to start it with the history and then end it with the new. So, I mean, keep an eye out for
the old and the new.
That's what it's all about. So keep an eye out, because I really feel like the next step with PCOS is going to be these, you know, it's going to be like how Mounjaro.
I have no doubt that GLP-1s is going to get FDA approval.
Me too. I think it's going to be next, right? Yeah.
So it, like everything, like theoretically, it would help for.
Yeah.
You know, obviously it needs to go through testing and make sure, because, okay, when you do these processes of FDA, you need to compare it to the gold standard.
Yeah.
So they need to do that. They need to make sure that you are saying, hey, you can use this instead of this.
Yeah. And I mean, they're already using metformin.
Yeah. So, exactly.
It's not a far leap. Exactly. You're already using a diabetes.
Is it better than metformin?
Yeah. And I mean, for obesity.
And it might be.
So far for obesity, it is.
It is, yeah.
So, yeah. So stay tuned for that. And we'll definitely let you know on our monthly recaps when it does happen, because I feel like it's just a matter of time. But anyways, thank you guys for tuning in. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com/20medicinepodcast. You'd be helping us out big time. And there's over 60 full episodes there. Okay, so check that out. You also get a certain percentage, I don't remember right now, off of our merch. And leading to the merch, check out our merch, okay? A new merch is coming out soon. If it hasn't come out already by the time it already did. New merch. Check out our new merch. And the link is wherever you're listening or watching this. Mm-hmm. And we'll see you on the next one.
Bye.
Like, comment, review us on all streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, etc.
Check us out on Instagram and TikTok at Funny Medicine Podcast. Our Gmail is funnymedicine305@gmail.com. And remember, we are not diagnosing you.
Definitely not. Just funny stuff.
See you later, guys.